Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read.
What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. I am so sore today. On an unrelated note, I hit 400% of my move goal yesterday and 300% of my exercise goal on my Apple Watch. I am completely dead. I did a lot of really exhausting stuff yesterday, and it's the last day I had with the dumpster for tearing everything out in the bathroom. So I had to move a lot of trash and stuff all the way up. My yard is basically just a hill. It's one story from the front and the backyard. I don't have two stories of my house, but there's a quote unquote basement. There's an 8-foot crawl space. And that was a nightmare. When we cut out the door to get into the crawl space, it's just all concrete block or whatever, and the guys just threw it inside, like into the corner, and I had been meaning to get rid of it, and here I have a dumpster, so I just filled buckets full of just concrete and then carried it up the hill, and it must have been 30, 40 bucketfuls of just all the concrete and all the stuff that I've done down there. And then there was this huge pallet. I don't know. There's the amount of things that I'm just so curious what went on in this house before I bought it. There were doors in the attic. Like, somebody didn't know how to get rid of doors. And they're swollen and stained and nasty because they threw them in the attic. And I don't even know how. Like, it was such a pain to try to get them. I mean, I just have one of those, like, pull down ladder, like attic ladders or whatever. Like, how do you even get a door up there? Like, that was such a nightmare. And the AC unit is right in front of it, so it's not like you could just push it up. Like, you've got all this space. You're crammed in there between like a bunch of engineered trusses and a giant AC unit. And they some of the things in this house. It looks like somebody at some point kicked the front door in. So I don't know. But yeah, a lot of things to get rid of. Threw away a lot of doors, a lot of concrete. Oh man, and I am just worn, slammed out. But that's not what this show's about. I just talked 2 minutes about nothing. Okay. So we are getting back into J.W. Weatherman's human threat model. This should be added to the threat model. You can exhaust a person and have them accomplish nothing. But we are at prohibition slavery, 4.4. And we've only got, 10 more pages maybe of this thing? Yeah, okay, maybe it is a little bit. It's 11. So yeah, about a third of it left. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in, and we'll take a break in a bit to talk about our sponsor, but for now, we will have no further delay. We are at section 4.4 of the Human Threat Model by J.W. Weatherman, Prohibition Slavery. Prohibition slavery is a well-selected combination of attacks. First, the attacker convinces the victims that a human's body is not his own property, and that using violence against humans that do not attack others, but do make use of a specific good, is just and reasonable. This makes it easier for the attacker to take the goods of the sellers and buyers of that prohibited good. Under prohibition slavery, the attacker creates a victimless crime out of a popular activity, such as drinking alcohol or using other drugs. It is most effective if the attack activity is unpopular and seen as distasteful to the majority of the population, because the predator will expend less effort in convincing bystanders that their actions are not worth preventing, and they may even gain unpaid enforcement labor in bystanders that find the activity objectionable. After declaring an activity illegal, the predator then catches the victim performing the activity and uses this as an excuse for extortion. This has two effects. First, the predator is able to extract wealth from the victim through fines and penalties for engaging in the activity. And second, the predator has increased the cost of producing the popular good for everyone except himself. This is because any manufacturers of the good have the additional costs of avoiding being caught by the predator. Now the predator is able to provide the good, usually through intermediaries who provide payoffs, at monopoly prices. Normally, a monopoly is created when the predator announces that he is the only permitted supplier. In this case, the predator announces that there are no permitted suppliers, but when the predator becomes a supplier, because he is the only one that doesn't need to fear enforcement, he accomplishes the same result. He has established himself as a monopoly. The only difference is in the deception offered as a justification. Prohibition slavery is often combined with taxation slavery, where the cost to enforce the prohibition is used to justify greater theft through taxes. Past attacks. U.S. alcohol prohibition from 1920 to 1933, and the U.S. war on drugs, 1914 to the present day. Expenses. The only significant costs involved are spent on preventing competing providers, but they can be extorted by taking their goods and then reselling them or through fines. And this is often a net profitable activity. Although a marketing campaign is required to convince the bystanders that the activity should be prohibited, this cost can be mitigated by choosing an activity that some of the population already wants to prohibit. This cost is far lower than the cost of acquiring victims by purchasing them from other attackers. Income. Productivity is relatively unaffected by this form of slavery as long as the activity is seen as optional by the victims. Because the predator needs the violations to occur in order to sell the prohibited products, he will focus his efforts on extorting competing providers rather than enforcing the prohibition on the victims themselves. This results in relatively little disruption for the buyer-only victims, and this is always the majority. Because the predator must sell an activity that is seen as optional in order to keep the cost low, the portion of goods stolen from the victim must remain low. For a small percentage of the victims, the good may be addictive enough so that the predator gains a high portion of their productivity. This isn't ideal, as it could result in a higher cost for the predator, as in socialist slavery, but he can offset these costs by exaggerating the risks beyond all reason to justify increasing taxation. In fact, if the claims are sufficiently absurd, then legitimate sources of caution will be ignored by potential users, and this could also encourage consumption of the prohibited good. Link to a YouTube video detailing this. Profitability, moderate. Because the costs are so low and the productivity of the victims is almost unaffected, the profitability is pretty good, even though most of the victims' goods are not stolen. How Bitcoin will disrupt prohibition slavery. Like monopoly slavery, prohibition slavery is only possible if the predator is able to prevent competitors from providing the product or service. While most of the goods stolen in monopoly slavery are from monopoly prices, prohibition slavery bans a product so popular that the fines and penalties represent an additional revenue stream. Both of these points of profit are disrupted by anonymous transactions enabled by Bitcoin. First, the predator will not be able to prevent competing providers. The sting operation, where an agent of the predator pretends to be a peaceful buyer, is the preferred method to identify and violently shut down competition. However, if the transactions are anonymous, the predator would be able to buy products from the competition, but he would not be able to lay hands upon the seller. Second, the predator will not be able to extort the buyers through fines and penalties for the same reason. Buyers will be able to buy from anyone, including the predator, without revealing their physical location, making the threat of violence from the predator impotent. Taxation slavery. Taxation slavery redefines property in such a way that allows for the attacker to steal their goods, because the attacker is providing a service that can't be provided if property is respected. Democratic elections are often added as an additional deception. The claim is made that if the theft is approved by a majority of individuals, then all individuals have consented to the theft, and therefore it is no longer theft. Under taxation slavery, instead of stealing all of the productive output of the victim, the predator steals a portion of the productive output of the victim at regularly scheduled intervals. The most common service provided by the attacker to justify this theft is defense services. Past attacks. The Italian-American Mafia, from 1931 to present. A Wikipedia article on the five families. Taxation in the U.S., 1776 to present. Wikipedia article on taxation. Expenses. A high percentage of the victims, when combined with at least one full generation of indoctrination from youth and democratic elections, believe themselves to be free. In fact, they believe that although they are victims, they are also equally predators because they enjoy the labor taken from others as they share in the spoils. A result they believe the distinction between victims and predators isn't applicable. Of course, there still remains true predators that are only victims in appearance because they steal much more than is stolen from them. There also remains true victims that are only predators in appearance because they are stolen from much more than they steal, but the deception is effective. This form of slavery allows the victim to enjoy significantly more material well-being as his productivity is increased. As a result, it has proven effective at stealing from highly skilled and creative victims. Because of this relatively high productivity of taxation slavery, the victims can be left with an ever-increasing amount of goods while, at the same time, they support an ever-increasing amount of goods stolen. It should be observed that the victims do in fact enjoy greater freedom than in racial slavery. This reduces the effort required to deceive the victim because he is, in reality, victimized less. Because the victims themselves also participate in predatory activities and see themselves as free, the inclination of bystanders to assist them is greatly reduced. Even if the victim was released from the clutches of the predator, he would return to his slavery. A bystander would not only need to rescue the body of the victim, but he would also need to rescue his mind from the idolatry of his youth, a much more difficult, if not impossible, task. Bystanders may attempt to educate the victims, but this can be cheaply countered through censorship and ongoing indoctrination. However, the deception is not so complete that individual victims, even if they believe the overall system is just, would not still retain their own goods if possible. They may vote for tax increases, but if they could get away without paying the tax themselves, most would find justification to do so. In order for the predator to obtain the wealth produced by the victim, he must be able to track the amount produced, to know how much to extort, and then intimidate the victim into handing over his goods. This is very expensive. It requires that the predator track the production of the victim as well as his location, even though he has a relatively high degree of autonomy. Once both the amount and location of the goods are known, the predator must display enough force to make the victim believe resistance would be futile. This is also costly because the predator must maintain the appearance of service to the public in the very act of enforcing his theft. Large displays of violence would be the most cost-effective means of intimidation, but would compromise the deception. To solve this problem, the predators often start by increasing the amount of goods to be stolen in the form of fines and penalties if the victim provides any resistance. If the victim still resists, he is, after years of negotiation, placed in prison with other, quote, criminals. Here he is often subjected to violence and sexual abuse, but the predator can claim this is incidental to their attempts to, quote, serve the public good, and that they try to prevent such abuses. This is the effect of providing a high degree of victim intimidation without compromising the deception that they are public servants and not predators. Income. The amount of income obtained through this attack is substantial. Most victims in the Western world have more than half of their production stolen in this way. Profitability, moderate. While the productivity of the victims is high, the predator must keep the percentage of his theft relatively low. If the percentage is raised high enough, this form of slavery, like monopoly slavery, becomes socialist slavery. The predator prefers to avoid this because taxation slavery is more profitable than socialist slavery. This is because socialist slavery has significantly higher costs and significantly lower productivity than taxation slavery. These more than offset the fact that under socialist slavery, the predator gains a larger percentage of the victim's wealth. How Bitcoin disrupts taxation slavery. Cash in general, and electronic cash in particular, greatly increases the costs of taxation slavery. The cost of tracking income is increased when transactions are anonymous. Under taxation slavery, the anonymous, or cash, payment price is less than in the open payment method. This is because even though there is a cost associated with being caught, the incentive to avoid the theft is greater. Many predators in the modern world have worked very hard to make cash transactions difficult, but Bitcoin transactions are even more convenient and anonymous than cash. This will create a virtuous cycle. As predators find it more difficult to steal from victims, they will also lose the resources to invest in enforcing rules that make taxation easier. For example, regulations that encourage employee relationships and the associated payroll taxes, as opposed to subcontractor relationships, will be harder to enforce. And this will lead to even less taxation. Racial slavery. Racial slavery is a combination of attacks against human productivity. The victims and bystanders are told that the victims are inferior and that allowing them to maintain their property, including their bodies, would actually slow human progress towards a delightful world in order to take all of the victims' past and future goods. Under racial slavery, the victims' bodies are treated as property that is owned by the attacker. By targeting an identifiable race of men, the predators can claim that the victims are not fully human. Racial slavery is not cost-effective for skilled labor, and as a consequence, is no longer common in developed countries. Expenses. In this form of slavery, the victims are aware that they're being stolen from. While it is true predators attempt to convince the victims that this is a natural and appropriate relationship among superior and inferior creatures, the productivity of victims of racial slavery is very low. Victims intentionally reduce their productivity by pretending to be less capable and intelligent. Under racial slavery, the victims are usually bought from a previous predator. This means that if the victim dies or escapes, the new predator will suffer real financial loss. Because of the obvious immorality involved, victims attempt to kill the predator in order to gain their freedom or out of a natural desire for justice. This is particularly a problem for first-generation victims that have not been indoctrinated from youth. Bystanders often attempt to aid the victims, but predators discourage this by dehumanizing the victims through amplifying racial prejudices and open displays of power and violence. By coordinating with other predators in the same geographical area, these costs can be reduced, but they remain very high. Income. Because the predator has possession of the victim's very body, he takes immediate and automatic possession of any goods produced. It is also possible to sell the victim to new predators in order to share the spoils without the need to wait for the goods to be produced. Profitability, very low. After the Industrial Revolution, the market value of unskilled labor was significantly reduced. This, combined with the high expenses, made racial slavery unprofitable. How Bitcoin disrupts racial slavery. Racial slavery is already unprofitable, but Bitcoin will further increase wealth and decrease inequality, especially among the poor. This should increase the expenses of attackers and make racial slavery even more unprofitable. Monopoly slavery. Under monopoly slavery, the predator forces the victim to buy his products and services. This is accomplished by convincing some of the victims and bystanders that this product cannot be provided in any other way, and that it is not a violation of property to use violence to prevent competitors. The predator then can charge higher than the market, monopoly prices. In effect, this steals wealth from the victims with every purchase. Expenses. Because the victims are often effectively deceived, the motivation to kill the predator is low. Bystanders are also often deceived as long as the number of services monopolized remains relatively low. Even the few that realize theft is occurring rarely associate it with the term slavery or the visceral response created by other forms of predation. This is partially due to the subtlety of the theft, and partially due to the fact that alternative services inevitably appear that are not seen as competitive to the predator until it is too late to convince the victims that the predator must take over. As long as the monopolies are limited to a small number of services, the productivity of the victims is not greatly impacted by the recurring theft. This is especially true if the victims can be convinced that it is to their benefit that the services are provided by the predator, because if competition was not prevented, it would result in a bad outcome for the victim, such violence between competitors, higher prices, lower quality, etc. Because most of the victims are deceived into believing the predators are actually providing them with benefits and not stealing from them, they willingly submit. As a result, the predator may have some cost associated with deception campaigns, but nothing as costly as purchasing the victims from other attackers. Income. By creating monopolies for key products and services such as defense, communication, and education, a predator can steal a significant amount of the production of the victims. However, if the predator applies this technique to too many products and services, it becomes indistinguishable from socialist slavery, and the cost increases accordingly. As a result, the most profitable option is to keep the portion of wealth stolen from victims low. Profitability, medium. Although the security and investment risk is low, the portion that can be stolen is also low. Additionally, the services monopolized are eventually replaced by alternatives, and this is accelerated the more the monopoly price is raised above the market price. As a result, the overall profitability of this form of slavery is substantial, but not as great as other forms of slavery. How Bitcoin will disrupt monopoly slavery. In order to enforce monopoly slavery, the predator must be able to prevent the victims from buying from competitors. Anonymous digital transactions enabled by Bitcoin greatly reduce the risk of secret exchanges, making this more difficult to prevent. Monopoly slavery also requires that the victims are vulnerable to violence. If they are not vulnerable, they will simply create and purchase competitive products, and the predator will not have the power to prevent it. For this reason, monopoly slavery can't function if private security companies are allowed to exist. This is prevented by creating a security service, police, that will not defend the victims against this violence. The establishment of a monopoly police force is a prerequisite to other monopolies and is generally funded through taxation slavery. To see how Bitcoin disrupts taxation slavery, see the applicable section of this paper. Legal tender slavery. All right, guys, let's stop here for just a second to talk about our sponsor who is keeping this show alive, and then we will jump right back into it. We're getting close to the end, and then we'll have a little bit of a discussion after the fact. Legal tender slavery. Legal tender slavery is the most subtle and sophisticated form of slavery mankind has developed to date. In this scheme, the predator forces the victims to use his, quote, money for transactions. The money is an asset that can be easily produced by the predator. For example, paper or insecure electronic money are common choices. The deception varies, but it generally applies the justifications of monopoly slavery to the product of money. The attacker also claims that using violence to prevent the use of other money is not a crime. Now the predator can profit three major ways. First, he can print more money and use it in exchanges with victims to acquire goods. As more money is produced, the value of the money held by the victims is decreased. In other words, the predator is able to steal the value of the savings of the victims without any physical contact. Second, the predator can use this newly printed money to fund the acquisition of new victims through war. Legal tender slavery is uniquely suited to support large, immediate expenditures. All other forms of slavery require that the slave owner use a steady stream of income to save for being able to spend large amounts of money over a short time, a requirement for war. In this scheme, the predator is able to print large amounts of money to fund his adventures immediately. As the value of money drops, he can also tell the victims that it's a result of the disruption to the economy caused by war and not a result of the theft. Third, the predator can manipulate investments made by victims. By increasing the money supply, he can deceive victims into making investments that they would otherwise avoid. And by decreasing the money supply, he can deceive victims into avoiding profitable investments. This allows the predator to create a boom and bust cycle where investments are made aggressively and then aggressively abandoned. Because only the predator knows the exact timing, he is able to buy and sell assets, knowing when they are about to increase or decrease in value. Past attacks. As of this writing, legal tender slavery is in effect on every square foot of the earth. Expenses. It is only possible to implement this scheme after the predator has relative control of a population of victims, so those startup costs are not included. The primary costs in this scheme are in preventing competing money and preventing counterfeiting. Competing money is prevented because all creditors are forced to accept payment in the predator's money. Debtors wishing to use up the least valuable money when paying debts would use the predator's money and save the competing money. As long as the predator steals enough to keep his money increasingly worthless, debtors will act as his enforcement agents for no cost. Although counterfeiting is always easy, because otherwise it would also be costly for the predator to produce more money, as long as the amount of counterfeiting is much less than the amount produced by the predator, it is not a significant disruption. This is easily achieved by monopolizing the banking system and ensuring that the money is bulky and difficult to hide in large quantities. Because this scheme can only be implemented upon an already captive population of victims, the investment costs are very low. A good analogy for this scheme is upselling. The scheme can't be implemented upon new victims, but once a predator has a population under racial or taxation slavery, this scheme can be stacked on top without significant cost. Income. Although the amount stolen by directly printing money is usually limited to about 2 to 8% per year of the total money in circulation, called inflation by predators, this is in addition to the savings that would be enjoyed as a result of innovation. For example, if a hammer is $20 in 1995, the same hammer might be only $17 in 1996 because the cost of production is reduced through robotics, better software, improved material science knowledge, etc. In reality, the predator will print and take additional money until the hammer is actually $20.50 in 1996. While it appears the predator only stole 50 cents, he actually stole $3.50 because the innovation is consumed by him rather than enjoyed by the buyer and the market. And this is only profit from the most direct and obvious revenue stream enabled by this scheme. In the second revenue stream, he is able to acquire new victims until he faces a predator that is also well-funded through legal tender slavery. So until that occurs, he's able to compound his profits by acquiring new victims. And when a war does occur that is difficult to win, the predator can greatly increase the portion acquired through taxation slavery, using the war as justification. Finally, he is able to make immense entrepreneurial profits by manipulating the economy as a whole through control of the money supply. Also, because this scheme is complex, most victims are completely unaware of its operation. They believe that, quote, animal spirits or some other manifestation of their own corrupt nature is somehow responsible for their misfortune. As a result, they work much harder to increase their production in a vain attempt to maintain their quality of life. Profitability, high. Because the costs are so low and this scheme offers multiple significant streams of income, the profitability is high. However, in this scheme, the slave owner is poorer, when properly defined, than if he did not engage in the attack. This is for two reasons. First, the human creature is not designed to consume its fellow man. When it is engaging in any form of cannibalism, it is by definition abnormal and neurotic. While it is consuming the productivity of others, it is unable to enjoy it properly. As an ancient proverb says, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be full of gravel. Second, the predator doesn't even enjoy more material prosperity because he has slowed humanity's progress towards making the world delightful. In highly developed economies, an attacker with the intelligence and energy required to be effective could easily obtain more property than he could consume without theft. Further, by disrupting the peaceful investment of others, he prevents the creation of goods he could enjoy. For example, imagine that you're the dictator of an entire planet. You have so much leisure that it's actually pleasurable to do manual labor, carpentry, rowing, etc. You've never had to consider the cost of any food that you desire. You live in a house so big there are rooms you've never used. If you're wise enough, you enjoy a healthy relationship, but you can certainly afford any consensual perversion you desire. Now, because you've become the planet dictator, it's obvious you could have obtained all of these things without being a predator. In fact, you could have obtained all of these things by doing less inhuman work without the need to steal. And here's the worst part. Someday you and everyone you care about likely could die from a disease that would have been cured in a world where productive men were allowed to work in peace. For this reason and many others, even the most profitable forms of slavery will only be executed by men with impaired and underdeveloped minds. How Bitcoin will disrupt legal tender slavery. Bitcoin will break legal tender monopolies because it is not bulky to transport in large amounts. As a result, it is not dependent on approval from the predator through border checks or the banking monopoly for transfer to and between victims. The first effect of this will be to reduce the amount of legal tender kept in savings. Bitcoin, by providing a store of value that's difficult to steal and has no storage costs, provides a better alternative. And since it is likely to become money in the future, victims will be rewarded with significant gains for investing in Bitcoin. This reduces the predator's ability to steal from victims by printing more money as the overall market value of predators' money is reduced. Second, Bitcoin will compete with the predators' money as a medium of exchange. Once a large quantity of victims become investors, it will be natural for them to use Bitcoin itself for any immediate exchanges. However, at this stage, and for exchanges that involve contracts and debt, the debtor will still choose to pay in the less valuable legal tender. Finally, Bitcoin will enable private security that will not recognize the predator's money as a required or even legitimate means of paying debts. If a contract specifies payment in Bitcoin, any security provider other than the predator would recognize the contract as written. And we did it. We are through. We have finished the human threat model and the Bitcoin threat model, both by J.W. Weatherman. Now, I want to talk about this in full, but as I've been going through this, I think I'm going to have to skim back over it and really take some notes about specifically what I wanted to talk about. I actually did just record an attempt at going over some of the things, but I ended up going down a crazy, crazy rant for like 30 minutes, completely ignoring some of the topics I was trying to hit. So I'm going to try to, I may actually still throw that in there somewhere. And reiterate some of those points, because I think some of them were applicable, but I kind of want to stay on topic and stay on these pieces. So I think I'm going to just do a follow-up episode on this and see if I can get kind of break down some of these points and give more examples of kind of micro versions of these things, like educating a person into believing that the attacks are like deceiving them into thinking the attacks are justified, convincing someone, tricking them into becoming less productive, because I think these things actually happen on like relationship levels that I think are really interesting dynamics that apply to the points that he's laying out here. And then I want to talk about how some of these things, like he talks about how Bitcoin can work to undermine it, like. I think he's over-exaggerating the ease with which things will be anonymous and how much anonymity will actually be there. But I think it's worth, because it's such a powerful tool, he's right in how it could play out. But I want to be, I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate on how it might not work and what other consequences of Bitcoin's existence. Like, where do I think the real power of Bitcoin is in affecting these individual types of attacks? So I think there's worthy discussion to have of alternatives that he didn't actually mention specifically in this piece that I think are really that I think are fascinating and very possible vectors of defense and reasons that Bitcoin could have an influence on these things. He talks about the gambling being behaving as an insurance policy. That's a really fascinating concept that I've been in. I think Augur, no, not Augur. Augur's a coin. What was the one? Augur is like a prediction market or gambling market, I think. But there was a different one that I was talking about. Damn it, what was it? Oh man, I'm gonna have to search through my links. There was one that just kind of happened. It's not got like a coin associated with it. It's something that they're trying to build for Bitcoin. I hope people are still working on it because the paper that I read on it was absolutely fascinating. And they were talking about all different kinds of things that you could do with it and applications. So I'm gonna see if I can find that one so I can mention it specifically. I really want to talk about what ways Bitcoin disrupts socialist slavery, and obviously legal tender slavery, which is, I think, the most powerful one. And I think, which is actually mentioned here, I think the undermining of legal tender slavery is an undermining of every single attack vector he talked about, because legal tender slavery is without a doubt the largest means of confiscating wealth from people who are not complicit in it, who have not given consent. In the entire world, the century of fiat money will be seen as the century of total war, and it's from a historical standpoint, I think this is a transition where humanity was so productive that we were able to waste so much value on destructive means because we didn't know how to protect and maintain sovereignty with all the extra production. It's like he talks about in the taxation slavery, is that as long as you let, you know, if they're keeping 80% of their wealth and you allow them the freedom to be creative and have skilled labor, then they won't rise up. They don't rise up against the state monopoly if they still feel as if they're profiting, as if their life is getting better because of their work. And because of that, the cost of having to fight the state, of being put in prison or having your life ripped out from under you because you didn't pay the mafia, is a much greater incentive to just let it happen than, you know, thinking, oh, I could have 10% more of my income or 20% more of my income. And all of that theft is much more hidden. I like the example that he gave about how productivity and efficiency should have lowered the price of the hammer from $20 to $17, but it went from $20 to $20.50, and that's because the counterfeiting of the currency sucked up all of the extra value created in the efficiency of the production, and then an additional 20%, I mean, an additional 2.5%, whatever 50 cent to $20 is, So it's confiscated the entire productivity growth of that market, and then as well as a little bit additional. And it's done so subtly that people aren't even aware that it's happening. And then, you know, you just get up on a pedestal and say, oh, greed is why prices are going up. And you're like, well, yeah, it is. It's because the government is greedy and they're going to pay for anything, whether or not they have the money, they're just going to counterfeit it. Like, that's greed. That's profit-seeking. That's using social power to profit yourself and take funds and value from people who, from the people who have earned it, to meet your own goals, to instill your vision of the world onto other people who have not consented to participate. I mean, that's the greatest form of greed there is. I don't see anything that is as deeply greedy and self-centered as people who want to force their version of the world and their version of how people should live on someone else and make them pay for it. Like, that's disgusting. So I think that's a I agree with a lot of the points here, even though there are some caveats that I want to go into and talk more about kind of the base ideology in terms of some of this stuff. But I'm gonna stop it there. I think I'm gonna stop it there. I don't want to go too far without being able to explain myself thoroughly and without having specific points to hit to either kind of be a devil's advocate for or bolster with what I think is another example or analogy to how and when it happens. So that will probably be today's Friday, and I will not get to it this weekend. So I will come back to this maybe next week. And God, my list of stuff to read is getting so freaking long right now. There's so much good stuff. There's one, and I don't think I've contacted them yet. There's one about the energy production of Bitcoin from an electrical engineer. The piece is so good. So we're going to come back. We're going to come back to all of this. And hopefully we can have some really fun, in-depth discussion on these topics. Okay. So thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Don't forget to check out cryptoeconomy.life. And another thing, I don't think I've asked anybody to do this, but if you would like to become a supporter of the show, I've been making on average like $5 an episode with Squarespace, but it at least, I have super appreciated your guys' donations, and it really makes this thing worth it. And it's awesome to have, even though we don't have tons of listeners for this show, it's really, really awesome to have a steady stream of income that pays for all my expenses, that pays for the hosting here, the podcast hosting is free thanks to Anchor.fm, so that's really cool. But the website, the domains, there's a lot of little costs that stack up that I don't even think about, like just having to buy new things or buy a service. Like I have a website building service that helps manipulate WordPress a whole lot easier. A bunch of little things like that, which just kind of stack up over time. Squarespace, essentially, the sponsorship has essentially been paying for all of that and maybe a little bit of change left over to spend towards something else or making an improvement. But Anchor has a built-in sponsorship program. You can become a supporter of the show by going to anchor.fm/thecryptoeconomy. And that will ensure that I keep doing this. And in fact, that would be a great place. I don't know exactly how to do it yet, whether or not I want to do it with maybe the Facebook group or something if I get time. But if you become a listener, I want to set up a group talking about what we can read on the show and other things that you want covered on the show. Because I'm doing this for you guys. Like I can read this stuff quietly to myself. But if you guys want me to read something or you find something cool that you're like, damn it, I don't have the time to sit down and read this. I wish this was on the Crypto Economy show. Maybe we'll start a Telegram group or something. We've got the Lightning group. Maybe we can branch out from there. I don't know. I'm going to experiment with it. I got to throw my next Casa video out first, so we'll come back to it. But if you would like to support the show, anchor.fm has built-in sponsorships where you can contribute, you know, just $1 a month or something and just have it do a recurring thing. And that would be wonderful. If you can afford to do that and you want to, you know, it might take 30 seconds of your time to go over there and figure that out. And that would be a wonderful, wonderful way to help support the show. And of course, you can always go to tallyco.in/thecryptoeconomy because Tallycoin has I think they've started a subscription service as well, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't checked in the last couple of weeks as to how that's going. But anybody who can do that, that would be greatly, greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to share it out with all your friends and check out cryptoeconomy.life, where I have all of these episodes and tons of other audio to go through. Over 240 episodes, something like that. I don't know. It's getting close to, it's a lot of episodes now. All right. So Don't forget to check that out as well. And I will catch you all next time on the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.